Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Tony, let's go.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
Glad that you are hanging out here with me. I'm Lawrence Holmes here with you until 2. It's one of those days where I feel like we don't have enough show to do everything that I want to do on the show. But we're going to try our damnedest to get everything in before 2 o'clock. So, hopefully, within the time that I said that Tom Dreesen was going to be on the show, and you were like, well, wait, who's Tom Dreesen? And now you went and looked up a little bit about Tom Dreesen. I find him to be one of our area's really fascinating people. I'll give you the thumbnail sketch of his resume, which is long. He's from Harvey. He toured on the road with Frank Sinatra, with Sammy Davis Jr. He toured with Frank for, 14 years? Tom's a comic. He's a stand-up guy. And he is huge in the stand-up community because of him fighting for the rights of comedians to get paid at the Comedy Store back in the 80s. So all of this that he's from here is pretty crazy. This is a Score House of L collaboration. So I do a podcast called The House of L. I talk to interesting people, and it's long form, and there's no commercials and all that good stuff. The conversation with Tom is 90 minutes, and I'm going to release the whole thing on Tuesday for you to download and listen to. Mitch was like, were you going to ask him some Cubs stuff? And I'm like, yes, I absolutely is, because he's going to be at Joe Madden's golf outing next week. This guy is fascinating. And look up his history. Him and Tim Reed, remember Tim Reed, Venus Flytrap from WKRP? I know I'm dating myself. Tony probably doesn't even know what the hell I'm talking about right now, which is fine.
Nope.
You should look it up. They became the first touring black and white comic team in America. These two dudes and the stories that they have from them going to white clubs and the Chitlin circuit are amazing. And Tom shared a bunch of them with me for the podcast on Tuesday. But in this conversation, this part of the conversation, I sat down with Tom and we talked about the Cubs, and it was a lot of fun. How does a kid from Harvey become a Cubs fan?
I've answered this question many times. First of all, I was like 5 years old listening to Cub games on the radio, you know, and my dad would listen to Cub games on the radio. Without knowing, I was being indoctrinated to being a Cub fan, you know, not knowing, you know, not by the time I'm 5 years old listening to the games, learning baseball players' names, and 6 years old. By the time I get out into the neighborhood, I didn't realize I was in enemy territory. You know, White Sox fans all around me. You know, by the time I was 8 years old, I could take a punch, you know. they hated Cub fans. But by that time, I'm already indoctrinated, you know. So, and the irony of this is I've been a Cub fan, but I rooted for the White Sox. I had dinner last night with Jerry Reinsdorf at Gibson's. And he's one of my dearest friends. You know, we tell each other jokes and have a great time. And he chides me sometimes and jokes with me, you know. But it was serious because, truthfully, there were bars on the south side of Chicago you didn't go into if you were a Cub fan. You never wore a Cub hat around there or stuff, because the rivalry was fierce when I was growing up. It wasn't anger or it was actually rage. They hated one another. You know, White Sox fans and Cub fans hated one another. And in fact, I forgot who it was. We had a long story. Oh, it was Mike Downey from the Chicago Tribune at one time. When the Sox were supposed to play, the White Sox were going to play St. Louis in the World Series, And he said, if the White Sox and St. Louis Cardinals ever get in a World Series, who would Cub fans root for? I slam dunk. They'd root for St. Louis. Because St. Louis is supposed to be the Cub rivalry. But they wouldn't want the White Sox to win the World Series and vice versa. But I never was that way. I wanted to. I always rooted for the White Sox, and you know, I'd follow their players and stuff like that. Follow their games sometimes, but I just was from childhood a Cub fan. You know.
Do you remember the first time that you went to Wrigley Field?
Oh yeah, yeah. I went there as a little boy. My brother and I used to sell newspapers. I had eight brothers and sisters, and we lived in a shack. Five of us actually slept in one bed at one time. We had no bathtub and no shower, no hot water. It was a rat-infested, roach-infested shack. Both my parents were alcoholic at one time. So my older brother and I, he taught me how to shine shoes in taverns, set pins in bowling alleys, caddy in the summertime, having paper out, all to help feed my brothers and sisters. And we'd bring our money home. And my mom would put like a nickel in a little crack cup up in a cupboard. And as that cup got filled, my brother and I could take the IC from Harvey downtown, the elevated over to Wrigley, and then go sit in the bleachers for like 50 cents in those. That shows you how old I am. You know? And I remember going there the first time. And then later with the nuns, I was an altar boy, and they took us one time, which caused me to tell this joke, if you don't mind me to tell. The rest of my career, I would tell everybody, yeah, I went to the game with the nuns one time, and that's when they wore the habits. And there were two guys sitting behind the nuns, and they couldn't see the game over the nuns' habits. And one guy got very angry, and he said to his buddy loud enough so the nuns could hear him, I'm going to go to Texas. Only 10% of the population there are Catholic. And the other guy said, yeah, I'm going to go to Oklahoma. Only 5% of the population there are Catholic. And one of the nuns turned around and said, why don't you go to hell? There are no Catholics down there.
That had to have been quite the experiences back then to go and know that you're living in that crazy rivalry between the two teams where you describe it as rage. Like so let's go to a happier place then. When they win in 2016, what was that like for you?
I'm going to tell you, you aren't going to believe what I'm about to tell you, but I went to three games at Wrigley Field because I wasn't going to miss seeing the Cubs in the World Series at Wrigley Field. I mean, it never happened in my lifetime, you know. So I went to three games. One night with my nephew, Kerry Pulisi, one night with my road manager, Brandon Gold, one night with Gary Sinise, who was in town, and he's a Cub fan. So now I have to go do a gig down in Rancho Mirage in California, and it's a corporate gig. And I told him, look, I'm going to do my show up front because I got to get in. I'm not going to miss the seventh game at they were in Cleveland. I get to my suite in time. I'm all alone, and I watch that game. And you know the story. It rained and all this other stuff, and they pulled it off. And I have been a comedian for 50 years. I've made my living speaking in front of audiences for 50 years. I couldn't talk. I was so choked up. My daughter called me. I couldn't talk. I walked. I'm getting choked up when I say that. I walked that floor, and I thought about all the people I knew that were dead, that were Cub fans. I thought about family and friends that didn't get a chance to see this, and all the joking and the ribbing we took for years and years, and good naturedly, you know, how long has it been? 108 years, you know, people razzing. But then afterward, I was surprised at my emotions but I realized that we vicariously live through those guys. You know, that we're from Chicago. In Chicago, it snows, it rains, it sleets. You got to go to work in a freezing cold, 20 below zero, but you're hardy people. You get up, you know, but every year you have a little hope. Maybe the Cubs might be in the World Series this year, you know. I used to do a joke, not a joke, I used to say, I'm worried if the Cubs ever win the World Series because there was a fact out that the least amount of suicides in baseball fandom were among Cub fans. And I thought, because every year they'd say, well, maybe this will be the year that they win the World Series. So my thinking was, the day they win the World Series, the following day, 20,000 people will be leaping off the top of the Tribune Tower.
Because they would have lived to see it all.
Yeah, what else is there to live for? The Cubs won the World Series. So that was a big wrap-up there. I just was very emotional. I make my living talking. I couldn't talk. That's how emotional it was for me.
The next day, did you wake up and did you need proof? Do you need the proof of, oh, it's on TV or it's in the newspaper because I don't believe what just happened?
No, because if phone calls start pouring in from all over the country. You know, I mean, well, umpires that I know. You know, I was bat boy for the Cubs for 4 years. In the 80s, I would come back and perform at Zany's Comedy Club, and then I would be bat boy. The Cubs only played day games. And so all the players and their wives would come to my shows at night. You know, rookie Greg Maddox and Jamie Moyer and, you know, I mean, Rick Sutcliffe. And, I mean, they were veterans, but Jody Davis and all the guys would come to my Keith Moreland. And then I announced the game when Harry Carey had the stroke, so me and Steve Stone. And so I had all these Cub fans calling me from all over the country trying to get a hold of me because they wanted to share that moment, you know. I tell you how you could have made a fortune, Lawrence, and I thought about it that night. I'm so dumb. You could have been outside of Wrigley Field with a big truck and had these wreaths, and it would say Mom, Dad, Grandpa. It would have Cubs win, and that people could have taken it because more people were going to the cemeteries talking to their deceased parents or brothers or sisters. And if you had those, I could have made a – I never thought about that. But I thought about it afterward, you know. That would have been a great way to you know, make a buck and also for people to take the wreath to their family's grave, you know.
I have some friends that actually – my friend Michael Beller, who writes for Sports Illustrated, Jake Johnson, who's an actor out in L.A., a Chicago guy – they both went to
the Cleveland.
They went to the cemetery.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've heard a lot of stories, like doing the talk show in Chicago, you hear a lot of stories of people taking the radio to the cemetery to listen to the end of the game.
Wow.
You know, stuff like I don't even know if you knew. I mean, you were at the ballpark, obviously, but did you remember when people were writing on the side of Wrigley Field that they had put out some chalk? And people were writing. I did a whole story on it. There was not enough room on the brick facade for all the people that wanted to write messages.
To their family. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It was a really beautiful thing.
Yeah.
I'm a Southsider. I'm a Sox fan.
Yeah.
And even for me, like seeing that outpouring of emotion, I thought was really incredible.
Well, you think about this is America's game, baseball, and you even wonder why. But I got to tell you, I wrote a foreword for a book one time, and it basically was this. First of all of us wish, and especially me now in my upper years, I'm flying here, flying there, traveling here, doing this and things. You just wish sometimes time would stand still. Just if time could stand still just for a little while, because it's going too fast. And the older you get, the more you're going to realize. You know, you'll have a birthday, and next thing you know, it seems like 2 weeks later, and another birthday comes. You go, no, I was just, you know, 37, now I'm 38, you know, all that kind of stuff. So you wish time would stand still. So I wrote the foreword to this book one time that you're driving through a neighborhood in Chicago, and you come to a stop sign. You're in a neighborhood, and you look to your right. There's a ballpark in the middle of this neighborhood. You park your car, and you walk into that ballpark, and you go, and you're going to sit into a seat that your great-great-grandfather sat in, that your great-grandfather sat in, that your father sat in, that you sat in, that your son sits in, and your son's son, in that same seat. And you're going to watch the same game they watched, the same game, in the same park, in the same seat, and for the first time in your life, time stands still.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a beautiful thought. And it fits so perfectly with baseball itself.
Yeah. And watch a game, by the way, and you're watching the same game they watched, you know, and all that kind of stuff. That's what baseball is about. And the other thing, too, is why are fans? I remember I once said that if somebody ever said to me, I used to be a Met fan, then I said, then you never were. No, I used to be, but now I'm a Dodger fan. I live out here now. I said, then you never were a Met fan. No, I wasn't. No, you were not, because the word fan derives from the word fanatic. You know, you either are a fan. If you're a fan, you're a fan for life. For life. That's why, you know, as much as I would root for the Sox, but my heart is stuck with the Cubs. You know?
Right. You were happy for us in 05.
Oh, no question. No question.
But it didn't feel like yours. That's exactly how I felt in 16. Like, I'm happy for everyone over there.
Yeah.
I host the Joe Madden show. I love Joe.
Yeah.
I'm happy for him. I'm happy for all those guys. There's a good group of people that work over there. But it wasn't my championship.
Yeah.
When the White Sox won in 05. I cried like a baby, Tom.
There you go.
It was. Yeah. I had a little small bottle of champagne. Yeah. I got home. opened it and cried like a baby.
Yeah, well, see, again, it's hard to explain that to somebody. You know, they say, well, you know, what do you, I've known guys that would go into combat but would cry if the Cubs won or the Sox won. I mean, it has nothing to do with manhood. It just has to do. It has to do with feeling. You know, we vicariously live through them. You know what? We get up every day here in Chicago and we don't win every day. We fight and they don't win every day. You know, they don't win every day. They try as hard as they can and they come up short. They try as hard as they can and they come up short. And that happens to us. But then one day they try as hard as they can and they're the best team in all of baseball. Whoa. You know, that, you know, if I could have that moment. And what was that song that was on Broadway? I think something about one moment, that special moment, you know. And that was that sometimes if we can't achieve that special moment individually, you know, then we vicariously do it through our sports teams, the Bears, you know. The one thing that White Sox and Cub fans agree with is the Chicago Bears.
For sure.
We get together there.
We get together Sundays in the fall, and then we all are one big family again.
Yeah, absolutely.
When the Bears are playing. I know you're going to be in Joe Madden's celebrity tournament.
Yeah.
What do you think of Joe?
I love Joe. I mean, I met him, and I just think he's a terrific guy. First of all, I'm a neighborhood guy. You know, Frank Sinatra once said, a guy in the New York Times said, why do you keep Tom Dreesen as your comedian for all these years? And Frank said, you mean besides the fact that he's funny? And the guy said, yeah, okay, besides the fact that he's funny. He said, well, if I'm a saloon singer, and I am, Tommy's a saloon comedian. He said, by that I mean we're just a couple of neighborhood guys. And I'm a neighborhood guy, and I recognize another neighborhood guy. I just recognize it. And Joe, the first time I met him, he's a guy from the neighborhood. He's a guy you'd have a beer with, a guy you'd talk baseball with. He's a guy you'd talk, you know, whatever with, politics with. You talk whatever. He's just a neighborhood kind of guy. And I like his easy-mannered approach to the game, you know. And he's a winner.
It was my honor to sit down with Tom Dreesen. And I'm telling you, that portion of the interview just scratches the surface. That was just us getting to know each other. And when the whole thing comes out, the whole 90 minutes of the conversation, this guy has seen some stuff. Being on the road with Sinatra and Sammy Davis Jr., the fight for, he was a Teamster. He's the fight for fair wages for comedians in the 80s and the comic strikes. Him and Tim Reed going on tour as a black-white comic team in the 60s? The 60s? Man, I learned so much. It was terrific. And if you were listening to that and you're like, well, wait, I don't quite know who Tom Dreesen is, just do a quick search of this dude. I'm telling you, man, that guy is legit. And I asked him about Harvey. Like, why he reps Harvey. Like, he doesn't rep the South Side. He's not like, oh, I'm from Chicago. He's real into repping Harvey. And we talked about that. Man, I cannot wait to share that with you. I'm editing it. I'm getting everything, like, together. But on Tuesday, I'm going to drop it, and you need to listen because that guy has a lot of information. And I hope that you enjoyed it. Even if you didn't know who Tom Dreesen was, you need to look it up. If you don't know, now you know. Back after this on The Score. I'm loving the feedback via the text of people who didn't know who Tom Dreesen was and went and looked, or people who knew and liked the interview. I'm telling you, man, the 90-minute version where we talk about the comedian strike and his role in stopping it and... He apparently, him and Tim Reed are going to get a Netflix series about what they were doing back in the 60s. Incredible dude, man. Really, really incredible dude. This segment is being brought to you by Anthony Buick GMC in Gurnee. Get huge back-to-school savings on every new Buick and GMC truck in stock at Anthony Buick GMC in Gurnee. There are 400 vehicles available, something for every budget. GMC, we are professional grade. Visit Anthony Gurnee. com. So the show works like this. A lot of times I have stuff that's going on inside my head. I'll text Tony and be like, hey, I want to talk about this, 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 and this. or I hear something go, hey, we should do a segment on that and we should bring this piece of sound back. Or, you know, Mully and Haw had a great interview. There's like a 3-minute chunk that I want to play. And Tony like will go and pull like everything. Now I think that the way that I do the show has started to affect Tony, because now Tony does this stuff to me where he'd be like, hey, did you hear blah, blah, blah? We need to talk about that. And a lot of times I'll tell him I don't want to hear it until we're on the air. Like, I want to have an actual reaction to something on the air. And Tony ran across something that he wanted me to hear. So what was it that you wanted me to hear and why?
Yes. So yesterday, the Bernstein McKnight Show had on Kevin Fishbane, who covers the Bears for a internet. I don't know how to run this.
Kevin Fishbane is a longtime Bears beat reporter.
Okay, that's great. And he came on and they asked him a question about how the Bears view Mitchell Trubisky and just the option, because it is an option, on if the Bears don't necessarily like what's been going on with him in terms of his development in camp. And Kevin Fishbane had a response.
Nobody would ever let a hint that they're, you know, disappointed with the way he's played. I mean, you guys, I hesitate to call them excuses, because the problem is, like, I don't know the play call. I don't know what Trubisky's reads are every time. I'm not sure the way the defense is playing. I'm not sure what Nagy's asking him to do. But we hear a lot of, well, I wanted him, you know, he said it at Family Fest. He said, I wanted him to take more shots than usual. Like, I wanted him to test these things. You know, we got a story out The Athletic today by Adam Johns, who talked to some of the guys who played for Andy Reid and the Chiefs. And similar to some of the stuff that Andy would ask his quarterbacks to do at training camp, try this stuff out. So because of the way that they discuss some of these mistakes that we see, you know, we're not going to necessarily hear. That's what we're going to hear when we ask about these plays. Now, I asked Nagy after Family Fest about Mitch's mechanics, because that's something that, you know, is not impacted by a read or something that is based on your pre-snap situation. So that's something that you want to see improvement from. And he said that he's seen improvement in anticipation and timing, and then kind of caught himself and admitted that's not really mechanics. But that's something that, for me, like, with my, you know, my layman kind of view of it, or at least slightly above layman, it's hard for me to tell necessarily the Mitch's mechanics are different than last year. I got to watch that in the game to get a better sense of it. That's where I really would love to know where the coaches stand. Are the mechanics better than what they saw last year? You know, because we know about the growth and the intangibles and the leadership, and he knows the offense better, and as Matt says, timing is better and all that stuff. But is he mechanically making the changes that maybe, and again, we don't know necessarily what mechanical changes they wanted him to make, but is he making those sufficiently? And, you know, unfortunately, guys, we're really not going to know, and we're not even going to get the full picture, but we're going to know a lot more, you know, in a few weeks after the Packers game. That's where we're going to get a better sense of all of this. As far as, like, the training camp stuff goes, you know, I've been saying it all along, and I probably said it to you guys, he needs to be better. Like, he should be better at this point in his career in camp. But I also am not setting off any panic alarms, because I don't know what is going into some of these plays, and I don't know what the coaches are necessarily looking for when they're watching him throw.
Okay, so you can follow Kevin Fishbane on Twitter, at Kevin Fishbane. He does incredible work, great breakdowns, video stuff, all sorts of stuff. He's a great follow on Twitter if you're a Bears fan. This goes back to something that I did at Aloho Daily about this. When it comes to judging quarterbacks in training camp, I am now to the point where I don't feel comfortable telling you stuff that I see in training camp practices without also giving you the caveat of, I don't know. There were times when I watched Mitchell Trubisky, I think I watched 3 different practices, and there wasn't a point where I was like, wow, like, I wasn't blown away. I thought that he made some mistakes. I didn't like his body language. There's all sorts of stuff, but you could make that same argument last year in training camp that he wasn't very good. And then when they got to actual game planning and actual opponents, he was much better. So it's part of my issue with how we cover and trying to discover ways to better cover Bears training camp and Bears preseason. it's a frustration of mine because, yes, you should have that, I guess, in the back of your pocket mentally when you're looking at, you know, Mitch struggled in training camp. But I'm kind of to the point now of so what? Because if he played great in training camp, I don't feel like it would necessarily be a precursor to he's going to take that next step in his development.
It'll make me feel better.
I get that it will make you feel better, but I also think that that's a byproduct of the hyper coverage that we now have when it comes to the Bears. Anything that is Bears related, like we want it and we want it now. It's my money and I want it now. That's how we deal with the Bears. And I'm telling you, over the last 3 years or so, every time I come away from camp and someone will ask me, what do you think of this player? And over the last 2 years, it's been, well, how did Mitch look? How did Mitch look? I can tell you what I saw that day. And I can tell you, well, you know, I didn't think that he looked great. I didn't think that he had a particularly good practice. The defense looks like it's ahead of the offense. And I don't know if any of it matters. And so do I keep telling you that? I guess as long as I keep telling you that I don't know if any of it matters. I don't think that I'm smart enough to look at those practices, the limited views that we get, and then be able to tell you, I think this guy is going to have a good season. Or I think this guy is going to have a bad season. All I can tell you is what other people who are smarter than me when it comes to this stuff have to say. And I have an opinion, and I know that people want my opinion on some of this stuff. I just think that sometimes we with the little information that we get from these practices, to make big judgments or assumptions is foolish. And that's coming after having covered the league for 15 years. The epiphany that I've had over the last three is I don't know. A guy who is at Bears training camp and knows a lot about the team because he's there every day is Chris Emma. We will hear Chris Emma's latest report from Hallis Hall because, you know, they're not in Bourbonnais anymore. They're at Hallis Hall. We will do that after a quick timeout. My name is Lawrence Holmes, and you're listening to The Score.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
The bottom of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Football. You know why? Because Northwestern Football is going to have a fun season this year up in Evanston. They've got a great schedule, including Ohio State, Michigan State, and Iowa. Season and single game tickets are on sale now at nusports.com. You think Fitz will come in here and do a segment?
And tell us to put away our cell phones? I'm good.
Well, maybe. Maybe he'll do that.
Maybe if we give him a $51 gift card to Hub 51, he'll calm down a little bit.
Wasn't that his jersey number, too?
Mm-hmm.
See, I mean, it works out really well. Fitz, come on down. Him or Dr. Jim? I'd love to get Dr. Jim. Dr. Jim Phillips in here? Man, you talk about a guy who knows a lot. That's a guy who knows a ton. Either way, we should probably shoot. Okay. All right. Should we talk about Illini football at all?
No.
Okay. How many wins do they have to get before we start talking about them?
More than they'll get this year.
All right. Let's say, what if they start non-conference 4-0? Then is it worth talking about?
Sure.
Okay. So if they're undefeated going into Big Ten play, I mean, okay.
Get them after they've already had 80% of their wins for the year.
Wow. What if the conversation about Illinois football is me interviewing Lovie Smith again?
Then definitely yes.
Okay. All right. Okay. We're all on the same page then. I enjoyed the last interview I did with Lovie was great. We had a wonderful time. And considering our history, that was a bit of an upset.
Lawrence.
We had a great time, though. I'm really hoping that he can do what he wants to do down there. I just don't know if it's going to all come together. But we'll see. We'll see. Hopefully, we have Illinois and Northwestern playing meaningful football at the end of November. That would be terrific. Wouldn't it be great if that, because that's their last game usually, right? The last game of conference is usually between those two. Wouldn't it be great if Illinois needed that game to get to a bowl? Now I'm really projecting. It's about time for McNeil and Parkins here on The Score. It's also time to get an amazing mortgage rate with your own personal Lakeside mortgage banker. Lakeside Bank, it's about time. Tony's a hard no on getting fits in here. Hard no.
This is 100% my bias coming through, but you know who would be interesting to talk to is Thomas Hammack.
Okay.
I'm a guy that was a position coach in the NFL for a good number of years in a good organization, now coming back to his alma mater.
Well, I I love Sean.
Oh, he's great.
Sean Frazier, the athletic director at Northern Illinois, is... You talk about guys that get, you know how like Gruden, you see Gruden on the TV, and you're like, man, that guy, like I want, you listen to Sean Frazier for like 5 minutes, and you're like, I'm ready to go play football.
The other cool thing about Northern is it's the only FBS school to have a black AD football coach and men's basketball coach.
Let's go. Bring him on. Let's go. Let's do it.
All right. We should probably reach out to Sean Frazier anyway because he's an incredible interview, and if someone say, what about ISU? Dude, we're like the only people who put Coach Spack on. So y'all can kiss my hiney. Like, come on. We are all about Redbird football here, kind of.
People still say hiney?
Well, I mean, I have to or else we get in trouble. I could say some other words, but...
Well, I just have to trust Tony to hit the button.
I don't. So, and I'm not, I can't see you guys now because of where we're at. So, you know, I have to make sure that I can edit myself sometimes as I'm talking. Okay. Maybe we should do, like on the nighttime show, what would happen is we had a lot more time then, but we would bring in everybody. We'd be like, okay, here's the ISU coach. Here's what's going on in Northern. Here's what's going on in Illinois. Spillage. Here's what's going on in Northwestern. Maybe a little bit. And I don't know if we have time. We'd have to do it like over days. I don't know what we're going to do when basketball season comes around.
Now we're asking them to come downtown in the middle of rush hour traffic.
Right.
Or you do a rapid fire segment.
Where like, let's go. Like we go like around the area.
Yeah.
Now let's go to Coach Fitz up in Evanston. And he's like, I'm calling you from a landline because no cell phone.
Hey, Lovey, Coach Fitz said this. How do you respond?
We could play a good game of telephone. We could do that. Okay. Pro football. Chris Emma covers the Bears. He's our show correspondent for Bears coverage. He files this report about Bears training camp.
The Bears move practice from this morning into the twilight hours of Lake Forest, set to take the field this evening at Hallis Hall. Before practice on Tuesday morning, Matt Nagy invited Mitchell Trubisky into his new office at the team's facility. The coach and quarterback discussed where they are in developing their Bears offense.
It was good. He's just talking about like where we're at right now with the offense, how I'm doing, just like checking in, just being on the same page, speaking the same terminology, and just keep progressing and keep getting better and keep getting on the same page. So we're going to continue to have those meetings and just conversations to stay on the same page. And he lets me know where I'm at and where we want to go and how we want to build this offense into what we want it to be. It's kind of a big picture thing, and especially when we get closer to game week, a lot of the more simpler stuff or the game plan stuff, it's game plan specific for who we're playing. But right now we're going against our defense and they're doing a lot of different stuff. And so we're trying to get a lot of plays that we have, just get them reps so we're able to watch them on film, correct them, and kind of throw it against the wall and see if it's sticking or not. But we also have our bread and butters, the ones that I feel really comfortable with, the one that coach is comfortable with, the ones where we can call all the time and just go out there and roll and play fast. So you just got to find that balance, and we kind of figured that out through the training camp, and that's just something we got to talk about and stay on the same page with.
Tuesday's practice featured a fight between teammates as cornerback Prince Amukamara and receiver Javon Wims got into a heated altercation. Wims threw punches while Amukamara held back, but the two sides ultimately made peace after their mix-up. Wims has been a preseason standout for the Bears. Among those he has impressed, Amukamara.
Yeah, there was a play in OTAs. I'm not going to name the DB, but he ran past one of our DBs, and I said, dude, Wims looks like he got faster, and then he did it on me. And I said, like what is it? I guess he just got faster. He's been doing a lot of work in the offseason, so that's one thing that's really improved. And I would say the receivers would say, like, he probably has one of the best hands on the team. And yeah, everyone's, I mean, I read Twitter, I read social media, it seems like a lot of people want him to get in and start making plays. And yeah, me too, he looks great out there.
The Bears kicking battle continues on with neither Elliot Fry or Eddie Pinheiro separating themselves. Both kickers were 6-for-8 in their Tuesday field goals, including a doink for each. The Bears practice again this evening at 5:45 from Lake Forest. For continued coverage of the Bears, log on to 670thescore.com.
Great stuff from Emma as usual. I talk with McNeil and Parkins and the side order of Spiegel next here on The Score.
Bye-bye.
Oh, you tripping. I'm out of here anyway. Peace out.
On Tuesday next week, I'm going to have Nicholas Castellanos and Derek Holland at the Budweiser Brickhouse Tavern in Wrigley. It's our last Cubs on Deck series. As of now, I mean, I guess things could change, especially if you maybe had a postseason on Deck series. That would be really, really great. So get some tickets, okay, and come and hang out. 670thescore.com/ondeck, presented by TimberTech and Xfinity. The McNeil and Parkins Show is manned today by Parkins.
That's right.
And Spiegel.
Oh, it's true. Count it.
I didn't realize that I read the promos for it yesterday, but I didn't realize that the On Deck Show was on a Tuesday. So will you have Joe at noon and then them at 1?
No. So I'll be at Joe Madden's golf tournament on Monday. And what he usually does is like media availability. And then I think he's going to come over and talk to me after that and then go golf.
So you'll have Joe on Monday, and then the Cubs players on Tuesday.
Correct.
Gotcha.
It's been a lot of juggling lately.
Well, I was thinking about this the other day. Joe's been here since 2015. He's done noon on Tuesdays on this station at 2015. 5 different midday shows.
Well, wait a minute.
Right? It's been a different midday show every year?
Well, three of those were me, but those were still different shows.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. You were constant. I'm just saying the...
No, just two of them. Just two of them with me. It was me and Jason to start.
Yep, you and me.
And then you and me.
And then...
And then Bernsey and McKnight.
And then now Lawrence. Okay, yeah. So four.
Four.
4 in 5 years.
I like to call my show a mid-afternoon show.
Okay, sorry.
Because I don't know.
It's true.
It's
true.
It's kind. I mean, it is a midday, but it's kind of.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's technically midday, but it's also literally afternoon. I guess from Joe's standpoint, not necessarily the radio ratings.
But I hear what you're saying.
When you think about like communication excellence and media accessibility. And the rarity of him placing a foot inside of the entire organization's mouth over the course of 5 years with 4 different shows, essentially. I think that was the context in which you brought it up yesterday.
It's a remarkable thing that maybe this is the biggest, like, Joe putting his foot in his mouth a little bit. If he went like one answer too far with the beat writers in Philly about his future, well, and it rankled the front office 5%, maybe.
With at one point along the way of the Addison Russell stuff, he stepped in it there and had to reframe. He had to reframe.
You know what? That's absolutely true. But I feel like that was a genuine blind spot from Joe. Like, I don't think that was a misspeak. Like, I think he just actually handled that poorly. Because it doesn't mean that he's been perfect, right? I don't think he handled the Game 6 and Game 7 decisions in the World Series aftermaths perfectly. So I'm not saying that Joe is
still
perfect.
Still waiting for that accountability, are you?
Yeah, exactly. Right. So it's not that necessarily, but just he's never, like, snapped at a reporter. There's never been, wow, that was really unprofessional.
He's also never been really boring. Never. I mean, name the managers who you'd actually want to hear from weekly for 5 years, who you wouldn't get bored of. I mean, Ozzy had that thing where you wouldn't get bored of him, but, you know, you didn't really get Ozzy in, like, this volume. I mean, you were talking about even just a decade ago, the access and the amount of time you spent with somebody wasn't quite as much as we're getting with Joe.
And Ozzy would have moments where...
He gave you nothing.
Had Ozzy been in this space that Joe is in...
Danger.
Oh, yeah. And I mean... And
Ozzy's amazingly surviving right now, as a matter of fact.
Right. Blue Chew, Punch and Judy hitter.
Not in the bedroom. Uh-huh.
But Joe Girardi had it in New York.
At the end, for sure.
Right? Like, a lot of high-profile managers that get paid big money in big media markets are not able to navigate it nearly as easily as Joe Maddon.
Does Francona do a 20-minute appearance on radio every week in Cleveland?
I don't think so.
That's my guy. I have such Francona love. It's outrageous.
Okay, Theo.
Well, no, but it's not just based on the Boston stuff. Look what he's done in Cleveland, man. I mean, every couple of years, they suck the first half of the year and then flip a switch and are unbelievably great the second half of the year. They got no Trevor Bauer, who they dealt away. They got no Corey Kluber, no Carlos Carrasco, who's got leukemia. Danny Salazar was hurt, came back, got hurt again. And look where they are. He's just the absolute best in the game right now.
I'm with you. I think he's terrific. And I'm glad that I have at least now can be like, I tried to tell you about those Twins. I tried to tell you that they're not going to hang on to this thing. And they might, but you can't do... I don't think that you can slug 162. Like, you better get some better pitching overall. And that's been one of their things. I will say, though, they've got an abundance of bats. And it is fun to watch that lineup do their thing.
But as they go through their rotation, they need Barrios to be an absolute ace every time he goes out.
And he's kind of taken a dip. He's not been horrific.
No, but if he pitches like a three, they're screwed. You know, because they don't really have a two. Jake Odorizzi, for the most part, has been that guy.
John Morosi, our guest today at 3 o'clock, he picked the Twins to win the division before the season. Was one of the only people I saw that actually did that on a national level.
They're a very fun team, and I enjoy them, and I enjoy a lot about them. But damn it, if I don't find myself rooting for Francona and the Indians to get it done.
Sure,
yeah, it's hard for me, obviously, but if it's definitely not going to be my team. Are you sure? I don't know. I mean, if Nova keeps going out there and doing what he's doing.
What a game.
His last five starts.
Yeah.
He's been unreal. His last five starts. It doesn't make sense how good he's been.
No, I know. If it had happened a month earlier, you really probably could have gotten something of consequence at the deadline.
That's what I was saying earlier, that it's so refreshing to just see competent White Sox starting pitching.
Well, how about Dylan Cease yesterday, because of the official scoring of runs after a passed ball, ends up getting
his
first quality start. God, and Wellington Castillo, I mean, I know they're playing right now, but my God, that dude shouldn't have been here. I mean, for a long time. It's been months. Yonder Alonso should have grabbed him on his way out. All right, you're DFAing me? I'm taking Wellington with me.
Well, when you bat Yonder Alonso fourth 42 times... Oh, yeah.
Lawrence, how much of your optimism about the White Sox rebuild that it will work, and I don't even know, scale of 1 to 10, how optimistic you are, but how much of your confidence in it working is comparing it to a division that is really winnable and doesn't have a team that is a perennial power or a team that perennially spends $200 million on its payroll.
That plays a role in it, Danny. And part of it is because the two teams that are behind the White Sox are so far from being anything that there are wins to be had in the division. But I feel like there is some you need to strike quickly to this. And I'm not trying to rush Rick. I understand what he's trying to do. But I do think that there is a window that is opening for the White Sox to be able to go through in the division itself. Them in the as far as the rest of baseball, I can't see that far. But the American League Central, that's why I think that's why people around the White Sox, fans of the White Sox, looked at the first half of that season and was like, you know, if you just had representative starting pitching. If you just would have had replacement level starting pitching and not disasters in the first half, that we might have been talking about them in a different space. And now that you're getting the best version of Reynaldo Lopez, it's been fun to watch him kind of turn things around.
Giolito had a career high in strikeouts the last time out. Cease with the quality, and you got Nova. All of a sudden, it feels like you have a little bit of a team.
And you have your two guys that you expect to be back in your rotation next year.
I just think it's such a huge part of it, and it should be for White Sox fans, because four of the six divisions have a team or teams that, because of resources, year in and year out, are going to be tough for you.
Yep.
Right?
You're not going to beat the Red Sox, Yankees, Astros. Like, that's
Dodgers, Cubs. The NL East has a decent amount of meritocracy across the top where you can convince yourself that if you run your organization the best of those five teams, you can rise to the top, and it's a relatively equal playing field with the Marlins at the bottom. And then the AL Central. Like, those to me are the two divisions of the six where it's the most wide open, and it's the most of a meritocracy.
Yeah, sure. I'm hoping that they get there. I do enjoy, and I joked earlier, the Luis Robert highlights that you get pretty much every night. You just go, man, that guy he's a something.
La Pantera.
Did you see that his baseball card, his one-of-one baseball card that he signed, sold for over 50 G's at auction?
I'm still trying to figure out how.
It doesn't make, like, I'm so far removed from the sports memorabilia game, and I get scarcity just as, like, a baseline economic principle.
And futures. Like you're betting on a guy's future. That's a lot. That's a lot of risk.
What's the baseball card market these days, man?
I was blown away by it.
I believe that my rookie Wade Boggs card has been $33 or less for the entirety of my adult life since I found it at a flea market at the age of like 21.
Here's the other thing. How long until the payoff?
Right. I mean, how good does he have to be? does he have to be? If he's a four-time All-Star and you have a one-of-one Luis Robert card that's signed and you paid 50 G's for it, is it then worth 70 G's? Maybe.
I
don't know.
I feel like it has to be a Hall of Fame career, and then that means you got to wait. You got to wait like 15 years to get ROI on that card. That's a bold investment strategy.
I was floored when I saw that. And I think at the same auction, they had a minimum bid for the Bryant and Rizzo gloves that they were wearing in Game 7 of the World Series to get the final out. And they had a minimum asking price of $250K, and they didn't hit their reserve. So at one auction, a Luis Robert one-of-one baseball card can sell for 50 G's, but the two gloves used to record the final out of the first Cubs World Series in 108 years, you're telling me that's not five times more valuable? That's insane.
That doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
So my dad has told us all the story many times that his mother, my Nana, decided while my dad was in the Air Force, 1954, he's in the Air Force, and she's going through stuff in the attic, and she's like, oh, my little boy is all grown up. He doesn't need this anymore. And it was
a Honus Wagner card.
Oh, no. It was an entire giant binder filled with the cards he'd collected all through the late 1930s and the entirety of the 1940s.
Oh, no.
So you're like, everything.
Garrick Mantle.
Man. Well, I don't know if he's got mantle, but
maybe not mantle.
A lot of DiMaggio.
Yeah.
Ton of DiMaggio.
Vera.
Hank Greenberg, Barra, Ted Williams. Just like an entire binder. She's like, my little boy doesn't need this anymore. It's an incredibly common story. That's why that stuff ended up so valuable. It's because everybody thought, like, I don't need this. I'll just put it in my bike and ride it around in the spokes.
It came with a stick of gum. How valuable could this piece of paper be?
Right,
we are Sports Radio 670, The Score, WSCR and HD Chicago, WBMX and HD2 Chicago, a radio.com sports station.
What are you guys going to do today?
John Morosi's our only guest at 3. We had a lot of laughs yesterday hanging out and catching up. We will go over some of the Joe stuff on his future from your conversation, the weird game last night. I can't help think about playoff rotations when weird starting pitching things happen, either good or bad for the Cubs.
When John Lester is the worst one on paper and yet the one with the best postseason resume.
Exactly. And then Quintana has a historic outing for a Cubs lefty.
And the highest F war of their entire staff.
Correct. So what do you do in that scenario? And I know Jed's on with me tomorrow at 2. I know he won't entertain it. So I want to entertain it with Spiegs today.
He'll entertain it.
Exactly. And then we have, like, if you watched Hard Knocks, you know some of the gold from last night. But Tanny has created a little spin on it for us that is going to be really, really fun at 4 o'clock.
The local gold?
There's local gold.
Because there was some local gold last night.
Yeah, there's
a movie that we've all seen that got played out in front of John Gruden's eyes again.
Uh-huh.
So we're going to have some fun with that McNeil and Parkin style at 4 o'clock. So that's about it.
Hey, Lawrence, I'll tell you that Super Sons Volume 1, the comic, the graphic novel that I bought yesterday and gave to my son last night, we read number 2 and number 3 in the book before bed, and then I let him keep the light on because it's summer, and he kept reading, and then we finished it this morning.
Damn right you
so
did.
So 1 through 10, done. Dude has got an addiction to reading, and it's comics
good.
Right now.
That is comics are, for lack of a better term, a great gateway drug into reading.
It's happening.
It is lack of a better term.
It works, though.
The gateway drug. It works. There are worse addictions that he could have.
Yes.
And he's got time. Yes. 3 or 4 years.
Oh, yeah. And he's my kid, so he'll acquire those.
No question about it.
Have fun, boys.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.